Well, in 2012, 2 weeks before Christmas, a disturbed young man walked into Sandy Hook Elementary School with a gun and opened fire. Within a few minutes, he had shot dead 20 first grade children and 6 adults in the peaceful school in America's Northeast, not far from New York. And one of the survivors of that tragic day was first grade teacher Caitlin Roy DeBellis. She saved the kids in her class by squeezing them all into a toilet cubicle, shutting the door and helping them to be brave until police came and rescued them. Caitlin's released a book about her story. It's called Choosing Hope, and she joins me now on the line. Hello, Caitlin.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for having a chat today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Firstly, congratulations on the release of your book. It's a very brave step to revisit your experience like that. Was it hard to write the story down?
You know, what I say to that, I'm asked this a lot, and it's a great question. I think the thing that is so important to understand is, for myself, December 14th, 2012 is a constant and an always. It is every second of every minute of every day. It doesn't go away.
Mm.
And so for myself, I think the reason I wrote Choosing Hope is because I realized when I started speaking to audiences that people wanted to connect their pain to my pain, and they wanted to share with me that in being there that day, in that moment, I had reminded them that it was a choice how to move forward from their own pain, whatever their own pain was. You know, the death of a son, cancer diagnosis, a tragic suicide. And they wanted to connect their pain with mine. And so in the process of sharing my own pain, because that's my darkest hour, came along, I knew that I absolutely had to, because if I could affect the life of one person going through darkness, to know that they could absolutely find the light, then that's exactly what I needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that tragic day, which is 3 years ago now, can you tell us what happened? How did you get the kids to the bathroom, to the toilet safely?
Well, we were the first classroom in the school. So where the shooting began, as he shot his way into our school through a window, was mere feet from where my 6 and 7 year old students and I were sitting. And so when we heard that initial blast of gunfire, it was very evident what we were hearing, at least to me as an adult.
Yeah.
There was not a second of hesitation, a moment of wonder. I knew what it was. And I knew that our only option at attempting to survive was hiding.
Yeah.
That was our only chance. There was nowhere to run, and that was our only place to hide. I mean, we're talking a single occupancy bathroom for a child, not for an adult. I had never been in it until that day. But in that moment, the decision that I had made that we were going to try to survive, because as their teacher, I'm responsible for them, the impossible needed to become possible. And, you know, by the grace of God, it did.
And what do you think it was in you that enabled you to act so quickly and calmly to save the lives of your class?
I mean, as a teacher, just as a person, I was in charge of them. They were my responsibility. And as a human, I wanted to survive. I wanted to live. I wanted to see my fiance and my family and my friends. And, you know, first graders, especially at 6 and 7 years of age, they lead by example and they follow modeling. And so I was very aware that if I did not appear to be cool, calm, and collected, that it would be utter chaos and we would have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, and you spoke very quietly to the kids until help arrived. What did you talk to them about in that moment?
There was very little talking. The few conversations that, because we were on the other side of a cinder block to a madman, we were not removed from this. We were in the center of it. So there was very little talking because we really did have to be quiet. But the conversations that were had, one was when one of my students started to cry. I knew that could be a trigger for all of my students to start crying, and that could not happen. And so I took her face in my hands and I just said, you know, show me your smile. You know, if you're smiling, you can't cry.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the smile overtakes. So I said, show me your smile. And I smiled at her. And eventually she, you know, stopped crying and just was quiet again. One of my students said, I really want to celebrate Christmas this year, Ms. Roeg. I mean, he's been talking about it since August when we returned back to school. This was really a pivotal holiday for him. And so I said, I know, and you will. We're all going to have Christmas or whatever holiday we celebrate. You know, and then, you know, one of my students said, I really, really don't want to die today, Ms. Roeg. And I said, I know we're okay. It was really just a lot of reassurance, even though I didn't believe any of it. Because I'm in charge. I'm their teacher. And yep. I'm the only one who in that moment could tell them it was going to be okay.
Yeah. And you and many other students and teachers at Sandy Hook have experienced the worst kind of trauma possible, but you have been able to move forward, and part of that is this book, Choosing Hope. How have you personally been able to move forward?
For myself, I think there's a real clear distinction, and I think it's probably a distinction that a lot of people who have lived through trauma and tragedy can relate to. I will never... not one day in my life, move on from December 14th. It is wholly a part of me. As I said, it's every second of every day. However, every day of my life, I will move forward because I have to. Because I have to, because I can. And so I think that's just, I think it's a really important message. You know, you don't have to pretend like whatever has happened to you didn't happen. Like, it's not wholly a part of you, like, you weren't affected by it, that it doesn't make you cry, that you don't break down, that some days are really hard. I think that's being human, and I think that's being real, and I think it's important in the healing process to not just try to push it down and pretend like it isn't wholly a part of you, because it is. But that doesn't mean that you can't move forward, because you absolutely can. And for myself in moving forward, you know, at first there were so many questions I couldn't answer, and the biggest of them were the whys. Why? I mean, it was just days of endless whys. And I realized eventually I was never going to answer the whys. I just wasn't. And for myself, the healing process began the day I let go of trying to answer them.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to. And I think what's so powerful is that we all go through really hard times. And I think for so many of us, we try so hard to answer questions we're never going to. And we forget that there's so many questions we can, and that there's so much power in that. But focusing our energy on questions we can answer can actually lead us to healing, even if they're not necessarily the questions we so desperately want to answer.
Yeah.
And for myself, there were two. There were two questions that I absolutely had to answer and that I knew I could. And one was, how do I make sure this day doesn't define myself and my students? And the second was, how do we get our control back? And the day I started shifting my energy, focusing on those two questions, was the day I started to move forward.
And you have been credited by your students and others who were there that day. They say that you have helped them move forward. What have you taught them that has helped them?
Well, they've taught me way more than I could have ever taught them. That's for sure. I think that what they taught me, especially following December 14th, and it was that day that I brought that box in front of them and I had that lesson, so to speak, of today's the day we're going to pay it forward, was the day that they taught me a huge lesson. That day I posed them the question, here's another box of stuff for us. What should we do? And they said, well, we should help someone else. You know, the obvious answer is that I was hoping to get from them. And I said, okay, you're all right. Now what should we do? And they said, well, we should help someone else. We should be nice. Again, I said, you're all absolutely right. You're so smart. And then they taught me the biggest lesson. I didn't ask them a question at all, but yet all their hands started to raise. And they said, Ms. Roeg, who are we going to help? How are we going to help them? What are we going to give to them? Can we send them this box of stuff? My kids were way more excited about the prospect of giving back, of reaching out, of helping, than they were about the gifts they had just been given. Mm. And as their teacher, that was the greatest moment, because I realized that not even a month after they had had their own darkest day, 7 years old of just unimaginable despair, they were able to say, you know what, Mr. Wright, we want to connect. We want to help someone. We want to make someone feel loved. And that's the greatest gift they could have ever given me.
Amazing. Amazing. And that is also how many charities were started, including your own Classes for Classes. Can you tell us a little bit about that charity?
Absolutely. Classes for Classes, I mean, you just heard the precursor. That truly is how the idea was born, was exactly what I experienced with my kids. And it was just this real light bulb moment as an educator that my kids had experienced this. And why shouldn't everyone experience this? The idea that you can give freely to someone else and learn that it is a far better gift to give than it is to receive. And so that night I went home and I started Googling, sure, on the internet, sure, that I was going to find something just like this. I mean, how could no one have already thought of this? And what I found was that there wasn't anything like the idea I had, brainstormed within my classroom. And so on that day, I said to myself, there needs to be. And so I started drafting it out, what it would look like, how it would work, the different features, the usability. And so now, 2.5 years later, Classes for Classes is a social networking tool. We are to help connect classrooms across the United States to know that it is a far better gift to give than it is to receive, that we can all help one another by giving back.
Fantastic. So, so good. And your book, Choosing Hope, it doesn't focus on the tragedy of that day, but at the hope that rose after it. And I think that's the most important thing. Finally, what message do you hope to bring to your readers as they read this book?
There are so many. I think the first thing is that this is not a book about December 14th, 2012. If you're looking for that book, you should look somewhere else. This book is a memoir of my life, and more importantly, it is a reflection and a true testament to my own darkest hour, which was December 14th. I can't write a book and encourage people to move forward from their own pain if I don't share my own. That wouldn't be relatable. It wouldn't be real. And I want to be honest with this book. Choosing Hope is a lifeline. It is a lifeline to anyone going through darkness to know that they can absolutely find the light, that it is a choice, and that it is a choice I would encourage anyone to make, that what seems insurmountable in your life absolutely does not have to be. You can proceed forward from it. I am proof of that. And I truly hope that that is what every single reader will come to know for themselves, for their own personal journey.
Wow, fantastic. Caitlin, thank you so much for having a chat today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for spreading the message of Choosing Hope. I so appreciate it.
Caitlin's book, Choosing Hope, is out now, and you can read more about her charity at classesforclasses.org.